Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, the total solar eclipse is fast approaching. We'll hear from a spokesperson for the Columbus Metropolitan Library about how they're helping Columbus residents prepare. I'll speak with the CEO of the largest resident theater company in America. It's located right here in Columbus. Shadowbox Live has a very powerful production on stage right now. We'll hear more about that and an opportunity they have for students coming up this summer. We'll learn more about a Columbus organization that's working to affect change with kids and kindness. Also, Ohio politics with Doug Petcash of Face the State. This week, Doug interviews Bernie Moreno, one of the Republican candidates hoping to run for election to the U.S. Senate seat currently held by Democrat Sherrod Brown. First up on Columbus Perspective, I'm joined by Ben Zanitsky. He is a spokesman for the Columbus Metropolitan Library, and this is important because on April 8th, I don't know if you heard, there's an eclipse happening, and you've got to get those eclipse glasses, and the library is the place to do it. Ben's going to tell us all about that and so much more that's going on right now at the Columbus Metropolitan Library. Hi, Ben. Welcome to Columbus Perspective.
Hi, Kate. Thank you so much for having me. You are so, so right. We at Columbus Metropolitan Library really want to be Central Ohio's one-stop shop for all things eclipse, and The long wait is finally over. Starting tomorrow, Monday, March 18th, we will be handing out free eclipse glasses at all 23 of our library locations while supplies last, limit 4 per person. So, come on out to the location nearest you starting tomorrow and make sure that you aren't left in the dark.
That's well put, sir. Do you have to have a library card to get the glasses?
Fabulous question. You do not need a library card to get glasses. However, while you're in, what a great opportunity to sign up for what we like to say is the most valuable card in your wallet. It's easy. All Ohio residents are able to register for a library card, and it's free, and of course gives you access to so many millions of materials and free resources.
Now, it's not just the glasses for the eclipse. The Columbus Metropolitan Library is kind of doing some other activities on the day of the actual solar eclipse, right?
Oh, absolutely. Not only the day of, but even as we speak, we are holding all sorts of fun eclipse-themed programs across all 23 of our library locations. You can see what's happening at the location nearest you by visiting us online and clicking on the solar eclipse box on our homepage. But as you mentioned, yes, we're also going to be hosting a special watch party event at our main library downtown. So we hope you'll join us. Of course, we'll have those eclipse glasses we mentioned earlier from 1 to 4 p.m. on Monday, April 8th. Our friends from COSI will join us for some fun science activities before and during the eclipse itself. So, fun fact about this solar eclipse, the last time that a total solar eclipse was visible here in Ohio, Kate, was 1806. And the next time that one will be visible here in Ohio is 2099. So for most of us, this will truly be a once-in-a-lifetime viewing opportunity. We really want to make sure that everyone is able to see it and see it safely.
Absolutely. And that's the only way to do it is with the eclipse glasses available starting tomorrow at the Columbus Metropolitan Library at all branches while supplies last. And I wanted to note really quickly, because we had a little bit of a technical issue when Ben, of course, mentioned the library's website. Some of that dropped out. It's columbuslibrary.org. And he said, click on that eclipse box when you get there to get all of the information about the activities leading up to and on the day of the total solar eclipse here in Ohio.
And of course, we're a library too. So that our staff have picked out lots of great books about eclipses and the sun and the moon for readers of all ages. So again, great opportunity to get that new library card if you don't have one, or dust it off if you haven't used it in a while and check out some great reads.
Now, it's not just traditional books with covers and pages. If you have a library card with the Columbus Metropolitan System and affiliates, you have access to audiobooks, to electronic copies of books. So you don't even have to leave the house. I have done it many times myself. Place that hold or sign out that copy online, download it to your device. It really couldn't be easier, but let's even go a step further. Let's get entertained by the library. Did you know you have access to thousands of movie titles absolutely free for you to stream with your library card? Ben, tell us more about that system.
You know, you are so right, Kate. And while we would love to see you all face-to-face in our 23 library locations, you can indeed enjoy access to the library materials right from your couch using your library card with programs like Libby, which gives you digital access to borrow ebooks and e-audiobooks. We have streaming services like Hoopla, which you can use to stream movies and music through your device. Films and documentaries from the streaming service called Canopy. So tons and tons of options. You can actually learn more on our website, columbuslibrary.org, under the books and e-content tab. If you click on e-content, you can learn about each of these programs and how to get set up on your platforms or your consoles or your iPads or your e-readers, whatever you might be using.
Any of those devices work. And with spring break coming up, what a great time to visit the library, first of all. The downtown Columbus Main Library branch is such a beautiful structure. It's architecturally, I think, one of the most beautiful places inside and out in Columbus, Ohio. It's a great place to explore for you parents who are maybe looking forward to having the kids home for a week and wondering what the heck you're going to do with them. Here's a great idea. Explore your local or the Main Library branch. And speaking of branches, Ben, you have a couple of new branches that are in the works, right?
That's right. Gosh, we have been busy building, rebuilding, and renovating and transforming our library system one building at a time. For your listeners over on the east side of town, we just announced the grand opening of our new Reynoldsburg branch, which has been under construction at 1402 Bryce Road. We'll be cutting the ribbon on Wednesday, April 24th, after a brief 3:30 p.m. ribbon cutting. Everyone is welcome to join us, celebrate as we cut the ribbon and explore this incredible new space. I can tell you firsthand, the teens in your family will be super blown away by the teen space in this new building. I won't say any more, but it will knock your socks off. And for those of your listeners in the Linden area, we're getting ready to close our Linden branch for a major renovation and expansion. So that building will close on April 6th, and we'll be moving library services over to a temporary location on April 15th. So again, if you're interested, you can learn more about these two new buildings or any of our new buildings or construction projects on our website, columbuslibrary.org. So much is happening.
It really is. Ben Zanitsky is a spokesman for the Columbus Metropolitan Library. First and foremost, he wants you to know that starting tomorrow, Monday, March 18th, you can get your solar eclipse viewing glasses at your local library branch. All Columbus Library branches will have those while supplies last. It's a limit of four per person, but make sure you get those glasses because, as you've probably heard, you're not supposed to look at the eclipse. That's very dangerous. A lot of library programming coming up also and already in the works around the solar eclipse. Go to their website. He just mentioned it, columbuslibrary.org, and look for the box that says solar eclipse. That's where it's all living for you right now. Ben, you also have a pretty big week of celebration coming up with National Library Week next month, right?
That's right, Kate. And you know, it's only fitting that this incredible solar eclipse coming up on April 8th actually falls within National Library Week, which is April 7th through the 13th. And we're bringing back our checkout challenge, which this year invites customers to help us circulate 135,000 items that week across our system. This is kind of our stretch goal, and we need your help to get across the finish line. So just by checking out even one item that week, you will automatically be entered to win a $100 Kroger gift card, thanks to the Columbus Metropolitan Library Foundation. We will be giving away one at each of our 23 locations. And again, all you need to do that week is check out even one item.
That seems pretty simple. I mean, one item, you could go through several in a week. I accept the challenge, and I hope everyone else does too. The checkout challenge happening next month with the Columbus Metropolitan Library. The Checkout Challenge, National Library Week, and of course, the solar eclipse coming up, and all of these things are happening at the Columbus Metropolitan Library. It's your chance to get your eclipse glasses starting tomorrow, to learn more about the solar eclipse, and to even attend the watch party at the library. COSI is going to be there as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. Ben Zanitsky, you sound like a very busy man. I appreciate your time today.
Oh, thank you so much, Kate.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
My son had a full-blown asthma attack. It came out of nowhere.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is
I had a fever and these terrible headaches.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had Zika virus from a mosquito.
He had a reaction to cockroach allergens.
Threats to your health can come from unexpected places. Get the facts. Visit pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
This is Columbus Perspective on the Fan. I'm Kate Burdett, and right here in Columbus, Ohio, we have the gift of the nation's largest resident theater ensemble. Did you know that? I didn't know that. Shadowbox Live is what I'm talking about. It's moved around town a bit. Currently, they're in the Brewery District, where they've been for a while. They have a great home there. And their CEO, Stacy Board, joins me today to talk about a current production that is really making an impact and some great programming they have coming up this summer. Stacy, thank you so much for being on Columbus Perspective.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity. I look forward to the discussion.
35 years, Shadowbox has been at this. It really
crazy.
It's impressive. It's so impressive. You should be so proud. Have you been there since the beginning?
I have. Wow. I have. I've been there since the beginning. And there's quite a few of us that actually, I think we have in our ensemble, like at least 20 to 25 have been with us 10 years or more. But there are quite a few of us that are, as we refer to ourselves as the SBX OG, have been here for, you know, two decades or more.
Wow. For the uninitiated, how would you describe Shadowbox Live to someone maybe who's new in town?
Well, we are an artist-operated organization. As you said, we've been entertaining Columbus audiences for 35 years. We are a collective of artists who create our own original works. So the through line is always music. There's always music part of our productions, but we have quite a few genres. We have, you know, some amazing artists that are part of the creative forces of Shadowbox Live. So depending on their discipline, different people take different leads on production. So we have sketch comedy and music experiences, which are really, really beautiful. No one needs to go to Saturday Night Live when you've got us in your backyard. They're super fun. Then we also have our choreographer takes the lead on dance theater pieces. We have a digital, our director of digital design and content is, we've got some pieces that take video, takes the lead in our band. We have music tribute shows. So there's just a wide variety of types of shows that we are inspired to create. And a lot of times it's just because what we think the world needs, you know, what is, you know, how are we feeling? And we try to respond to the world around us and let our art meet that need.
The Dream and Beyond is the current production on the stage at Shadowbox Live. What was it that you thought the world needed with this production?
I feel like our world is so divisive right now, and it's very unsettling and disheartening. And we wanted to bring together a show that could show the power of someone's courage, or just even a small group of people. How if they believe in something and they want to see change, that they can inspire change. So this is a show, it's almost like a live performance documentary with amazing music as well. And we kind of tell the story of all these unsung heroes that have really kind of gave their lives and their voices and their souls to pave the way for a better nation. So it's very inspiring. You know, it reminds us of how far we've come. And of course, we hope inspires people to understand, you know, we still have further to go, but that we are better together. And I just really hope everybody comes out to see it. It's just had gotten an unbelievable response from the audiences.
Stacey Board is CEO of Shadowbox Live. It's the nation's largest resident ensemble theater, and it calls Columbus, Ohio home. We are very fortunate for that. In productions such as The Dream and Beyond, Stacey, you have these professional working artists alongside students from the local community. Mm-hmm. And in this particular production, it boasts those types of students, and there's opportunities coming up for those students, right?
Yeah. So we, you know, unfortunately with the pandemic, you know, the world stopped, and that included our educational programs. So now that we have resurrected those educational programs and we've got a couple years under our belt, the pathway has been paved, and we select certain students that successfully complete our programs to give them an opportunity to participate in our emerging artist program. And we use this production as an opportunity. So those that come and see a show, you're probably not even going to really notice. You're going to see some younger faces, but these students are certainly accomplished, and we set them up for success on the types of, in the ways that we have them participate in the show. But we have 5 students that are doing this right now. And it's just a real joy to share the stage with them. They're so hungry for it. And there's such a vibrancy to their performance. And they add a lot. They add a lot of heart to the production. So I think everyone would really enjoy seeing them performing alongside us.
And you describe the educational portion of your programming as something that's really kind of all inclusive. It's not just sing or dance or how to build sets. It's a lot more than that, right?
That's right. Yeah, we really take a holistic approach to our education programs, but we're also very much, we call ourselves meta performers, and we call ourselves meta performers because we do a lot of different things. You know, triple threat, which is a very common theater industry term, which is singing, dancing, and acting, you know, that is pretty much the standard. Most people also play an instrument, or they do tech, or they do some sort of production arts as well. So we really encourage that integration of arts and that cross-pollination, because we believe, you know, if you're a singer, the better actress you are, the better singer you'll be. And if the better dancer you'll be, if you're a better actor, and just how they all work together. So we have a amazing program called the Arts Immersion Program, which happens over the summer. It happens June 10th through the 21st. It's audition based. It's students learn all 4 disciplines, whether they have experience or not. We don't really care about that. It's a matter of, do you have the courage to try? So you need to have proficiency in one discipline, but the courage to try all of them. They have master classes in all 4 of these disciplines, music, dance, singing, and acting. And then at the end of their first week, we jury and we put together a show where they are performing alongside us in a sketch comedy and music show. It's an amazing experience, and sprinkled throughout are a whole bunch of other workshops based off of arts administration and, you know, industry supporting curriculums that these students need to become a professional working artist. It's a very impactful program, and their showcase is just really one to be seen.
Now, are applications still open? Is there still time to audition?
Yep, applications are open. You can go to shadowboxlive.org and go to education, and you'll see the Arts Immersion Program. It's also important to note that these programs are completely underwritten, so there is no cost to the student. In fact, we're super excited because this year, thanks to the AEP Foundation and the Nick Akins Fund in honor of their former CEO, Nick Akins, we are also able to provide some room and board for any students that we would accept that are outside of Central Ohio. So, you know, it's beyond Columbus. It's within the region. And really, to learn the type of disciplines that we are teaching, rock vocals, sketch comedy, dance theater, you know, this is the only place that you can do that.
Sounds like a dream for 30 years ago theater nerd me. I can't imagine.
Yes.
What a great opportunity.
I mean, we created this program. Like, what would we have wanted if we were their age? You know, we wish that we had mentors like ourselves back at that time. And So this is what we've done. We've created this for these students, and we've seen the impact, yes, they grow artistically, and yes, we're grooming the next generation of artists, but just as people. You know, the arts are so important to teaching how to take constructive feedback, you know, criticism, how to prepare yourself for new opportunities, how to control your nerves in an unfamiliar situation, all those things, collaboration, teamwork. So it goes beyond just the arts that they learn. They really learn self-confidence. It's so rewarding to see how that takes them down their life's path, whether it's the arts or not. It will serve them for years to come.
Very well said. Absolutely. The arts are so important, and unfortunately, they are often overlooked or underfunded or pushed aside in respect to other things. And so it's wonderful to hear that an organization like Shadowbox Live is keeping this effort going. And I know it's not easy, so it's wonderful. And kudos to your sponsors as well for understanding that support is necessary.
Yes, we love our sponsors.
Of course. The Dream and Beyond runs how much longer?
It runs Thursdays at 7:30 and Sundays at 2 through April 14th.
Okay, still a little time. And then, of course, more productions on the schedule. And how many students will you be accepting roughly into the summer immersion program?
Usually around 20, 22.
Mm, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a big class. And
yes,
there's still time to apply to audition for the immersion program. Everything is online at shadowboxlive.org. Did we miss anything today, Stacy? I feel like we covered a lot, but there's always more.
No, I mean, there's always more, but, I hope everybody comes out to see the Dream. And I hope for any students out there that are interested in truly learning what it's like to be a professional artist, that they explore the Arts Immersion Program. They won't be sorry.
Get out and see the Meta Performers at Shadowbox Live in Columbus's Brewery District. And, you know, when you have friends come to town and you're looking for something to do, it's kind of a brag point. Hey, we have the largest resident theater ensemble here in Columbus, Ohio. Let's go check out their show.
Yeah, exactly. And there's food and drink. So, you know, that makes us another unique opportunity for people to show off our wonderful city.
I'm glad you brought that up. It is a dinner. It's a dining theater experience. And sometimes the very person that you just saw singing a song next brings you your salad. It really is up close and personal and kind of fantastic. It really is a great theatrical experience. Stacy Board, CEO of Shadowbox Live, thank you so much for joining
us
today. We look forward to what you're doing next.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Dangers rarely lie out in the open. So no matter where you live, it's important to know harmful pests can hide in and around your home.
Here I come!
Rodents and cockroaches are drawn to food waste and garbage.
I know you're out here.
Ticks lurk in tall grasses, and mosquitoes lay eggs in standing water.
I can hear you.
Rodents, ticks, and mosquitoes can all spread dangerous diseases.
I gotcha.
Seek the facts you need at pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
Over the past few years, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected how we live our daily lives. Today, we also face a mental health pandemic that threatens our well-being as we attempt to rebuild our social networks and communities.
The pandemic has reminded us to value family, community, and our human connections. However, it has also left many of us feeling more isolated, confused, and alone, struggling to find meaning amid loss and uncertainty.
Today, 1 in 5 Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges. But many of us do not understand what we are facing or know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we understand what you are going through, and we are here to help. Our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. We work every day to eliminate stigma, combat mental illness and substance use disorders, and advance mental health. If you or someone you love needs help, you are not alone. Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. I am Kate Burdett, and I'm joined today by Carrie Hay. She is the Marketing and Communications Coordinator for an organization here in Columbus called Seeds of Caring. It's a kind of unique concept, but when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. They're imagining a future with more kindness, more empathy, and more inclusiveness, and they believe it all starts with the future generation. Carrie is going to tell us all about that and about what they have going on to make Columbus a better place. Hi, Carrie. Thanks for joining us on Columbus Perspective.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Seeds of Caring has been around for just a few years here in Columbus, right, Carrie?
We began in 2016, so it's been about almost 8 years. However, we've definitely grown and become more well-known around the city in the last few years, for sure.
And when someone asks, what do you do for a living, how do you explain what the organization does?
So I typically say, you know, I work for Seeds of Caring, and we empower kids ages 2 to 12 in service, social action, and community building. All that basically boils down to offering volunteer opportunities for young kids. Seeds of Caring takes it a step further, where we're not just doing service. We're not just doing the hands-on stuff and then checking a box and, you know, going home. We are, you know, we're teaching these kids about empathy and inclusion and leadership, and basically putting some meaning behind what they're doing, instead of just saying, oh, make these sandwiches for these people. And then they don't know why, you know, they don't know who's this going to, what's their story. So we try to bring all that information in and combine it with service, so that there's, you know, some knowledge behind it. And, you know, what's the community need? Why is there this need? And who am I helping today? So.
And 2 years old seems like a pretty young age, but you can see that impact of them seeing this in the greater context of, we're not just making sandwiches. Here are the people that need these sandwiches, and here's why.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot of research to back up, you know, the empathy fact that, you know, kids as little as two can grasp that concept. So we have definitely a range of, you know, programming where, you know, it might be better, like more suited for 2 to 3 year olds versus, you know, the older end of our range, 10 to 12, you know, so
sure.
we have a variety. And so the events that come to mind that are really great for the youngest of our littlest helpers are, you know, like we do a lot of sing-alongs, kind of like music, interaction, dance with different communities. So kids and their families might go to a senior living community and, you know, get to sing, play games, do crafts with that older generation. So when they go to these events with, you know, the older generations, or they might be with the community of adults that have developmental disabilities, they are all coming together and realizing, hey, we're different, but we're really not that different. And, you know, we can learn from one another. So, I mean, two and 3 year olds love to sing and dance and play. So,
sure.
And so do the young and the young at heart, is what I like to say.
Absolutely.
Coming together.
What other types of activities do you offer for kind of instilling the sense of service, maybe in the kids that are a little bit older and a little more mm-hmm. able to do different things?
Absolutely. So, like I said, Seeds of Caring offers a wide range of programming, and we have both in-person and anywhere programming is what we call it. So anywhere programming popped up with the pandemic, because, you know, just because everyone was inside doesn't mean that our community doesn't need help, right? So mm-hmm. we developed these remote projects that families could do from home. So we're still running them, because it was such a great success that we continue to do both in-person and remote projects. Some of the programming that we do as far as in-person, we do a lot of stuff for our unhoused neighbors. So kids might come to the Open Shelter, who's one of our longest running, you know, nonprofit partners. We have over 40 nonprofit partners we work with. So kids will come to the Open Shelter, for example. They will get a tour of the facility. They will have a discussion. Usually there's a book that we read, a short like kids book we read at the beginning, and have a discussion with the kids about what we're doing today. You know, who are we helping? Why might they be in this situation? Like, can you picture yourself in this situation? How would you feel if this, you know, were happening to you? So there's that upfront education part, and then they'll go and do their service. So at the Open Shelter, for example, we have a variety of programming. We have one coming up at the start of April, and it's camper kits and hands-on help. So that means the kids will, after they do their discussion, they'll put together camper kits for our unhoused or marginally housed neighbors. So that would look like hygiene products. You know, if it's winter, they might have like pocket warmers. They will work with Plarn, which is, you know, yarn made out of plastic bags, and they'll put that together to create a sleeping mat. So they'll put all that together. And so that's the camper kit part of it. And then the hands-on help, it's literally anything that the Open Shelter might need help with, you know, like stocking shelves, or, you know, organizing their socks or their clothes. So really anything that the kids, you know, are able to do, and they have a need for it, they'll do it that day. So that's one example. We have many, many programs.
Sure.
With many different topics that are really quite serious topics, you know, mm-hmm. That can be hard to address with children. And so our programming and our curriculum, like everything we do, is very intentional with making sure that it's on a kid's level and they can understand, you know, what's going on and why should I care, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think we do a really good job of bringing it to the kid, to a kid's level, but also giving them, you know, the credit they deserve. Like, a lot of people discount kids that, oh, they wouldn't understand. But we believe that they have the capacity to change the world, and, you know, they're bright. They're very bright, and they're sponges. So this is the best time to get them involved.
Now, Seeds of Caring has an event coming up for Earth Day. Is that correct?
That is correct. We have our annual Earth Day. It's called Kids as Planet Protectors, an Earth Day celebration. So we have these little, you'll see, if you look on our website at the event, these little superhero characters, and basically we're inviting kids and their families or groups, you know, classrooms, scout troops, whatever, inviting them to come and spend the day at Grange Insurance Audubon Center. And we are doing so many different activity stations pertaining to environmental stewardship. We have a lot of partners doing really fun things, and we're just really excited about it. We do it every year, but this one should be the biggest in terms of, like, we have the most activity stations we've ever had. You know, the most, we're hoping for the most attendees ever that we've had. So we're really excited about it. It's going to be a great day, rain or shine. We have a very large tent that we are putting up outside. So if it rains, you know, we're literally covered, and we have indoor events too. So we're hoping the weather cooperates and we can just be free and outside and stuff, but it's going to be an awesome day.
Now, is this an event that's open to the public?
It is. Yes. We are inviting everyone who wants to come. Registration is required, but it's free. So this is a free event. It is on Saturday, April 20th, and it's going to run from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So we have two sessions available. We have a 10 a.m. and a 12 p.m. And so we ask families to register. But there's no, you know, there they don't have to present a ticket or anything. It's right. really just so we can kind of get an idea of what to expect, who's coming, when they're coming.
Sure.
But it's really open to everybody.
Sounds like a lot of fun, and what a great way to get kids engaged and involved in, you know, the Earth Day movement. And I love calling them planet protectors. That is such a cool idea. Carrie Hay, yeah. the marketing and communications coordinator for Seeds of Caring. They're doing really, really good stuff out there in Columbus. And if you'd like more information about this group, about their activities, maybe you'd like to get your kids involved. It's seedsofcaring.org, right, Carrie?
That's correct.
Excellent. Is there anything else we didn't cover?
Just would love for everyone to come join us next month, and they can find the registration information on our website. When you go on our website, there's a pop-up immediately that says, come join us for Earth Day. So that's how you get plugged in.
Within 15 seconds of logging onto social media, the algorithm has your daughter in its crosshairs. It sends her a steady flow of images telling her she isn't thin enough, pretty enough. They invade her brain, causing body dysmorphia, anxiety, depression, leading to the worst rates of eating disorders, self-harm, and suicide we have ever known. All while she's sitting right next to you on her phone. Congress knows, but it refuses to act. Don't let her suffer the secret pain alone. Use your voice. Demand a plan. Join us at the Center for Countering Digital Hate, protectingkidsonline.org, because it's up to you to protect your children from social media nightmares. Join us for her, for your daughter.
This is Columbus Perspective on the Fan. Now courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, here's Doug Petcash from his Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV.
Early voting started on February 21st. Tens of thousands have already cast their early ballots, while many more wait to carry out their civic duty on Election Day, March 19th. As of March 6th, more than 163,000 voters across the state have cast their ballots, according to the Secretary of State's office. Just over 67,000 of them voted by absentee ballot. The other 96,000 voted in person at their County Board of Elections office. Keep in mind, there are 8 million registered voters in our state. Besides president, the top race on every party ballot across the state is the race for one of Ohio's U.S. Senate seats. On Democratic ballots, Senator Sherrod Brown is running for his fourth term representing Ohio. He is unopposed in the Democratic primary. On Republican ballots, three candidates are vying to be the one to challenge Brown in the November general election. The very high-profile race pits State Senator Matt Dolan, Secretary of State Frank LaRose, and businessman Bernie Marino against each other for the Republican nomination. Political ads have been running in heavy rotation on TV, radio, and online. I wanted to delve deeper into their stances on some of the key issues in the state, the country, and the world. So I invited all of them to discuss their positions and ideas here on Face the State. The last two Sundays, I interviewed Senator Dolan and Secretary LaRose. You can watch those interviews on 10TV.com. Today, my guest is Bernie Marino. Mr. Marino was born in Bogota, Colombia. He became an American citizen at the age of 18. He owned a car dealership group and a blockchain technology company, and he is endorsed by former President Trump. First of all, Mr. Marino, welcome to Face the State. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Doug.
All right. First of all, let's start off with some domestic policies. One of the big issues we've seen in the ads that are running, like I said, in heavy rotation, is about border security. So as senator, what would you do? What would be the main thing that you would do to secure the southern border?
So the wrinkle in our law is the asylum law. So the asylum law says that you can claim asylum whether at a designated port of entry or otherwise. We have to change that very simple change. What we say is if you come into the country illegally, you are immediately returned and you forfeit your right for asylum for life. That shouldn't be controversial. That makes common sense. And if you come through a designated port of entry, then you wait in your prior country, whether that's Mexico or Canada, until your claim is heard. You're not just released into the country. We have to finish the wall. We have to make certain that we declare the drug cartels terrorist organizations. That allows us to go after their money. And then we're going to work with Mexico to have our military help them wipe the drug cartels out.
Now, your opponents have claimed that you have supported asylum in the past. Is that true?
Well, no, asylum is the law. So we are a country that will
amnesty. Amnesty.
No, the reality is absolutely not. We see what happens when you give amnesty, when you allow people to stay here who've broken our laws. It's not only bad for the country, it sends the wrong message. But for people like me who followed the process, it's infuriating to see this country reward those who skipped a line. The reality is both of my opponents are for full-blown amnesty. Now, one of them has changed their position since October, which is now that he's saying that you can't give people, let them stay here. And then the other one said that he wants to give those people legal status. We can't do that. You can't reward bad behavior. My position is crystal clear. If you're in this country illegally, you will be deported, period.
So what do you do about the thousands who are here already?
Well, it's millions. It's millions of people that are here already. 9.6 million have come across the border since Joe Biden's been president. We have to make certain that they're deported. We have no other choice. We spent $451 billion last year housing, feeding, and taking care of illegal migrants in this country. We can't afford to do that. Also, we have millions of people waiting in line to come to the country the legal way, the way I came in. We have to make certain that we honor the fact that they're waiting and doing it the right way.
Would you have supported the bipartisan bill that was recently in front of Congress?
No, absolutely not. I actually read the bill, believe it or not. I know most people think that's shocking that you'd actually read a bill. It was 357 pages of garbage. The reality is Joe Biden could secure the border today. He reversed every single one of President Trump's executive orders. And in that bill, every section where it had some good policies, it said, unless the secretary or president deem otherwise. In other words, it was a negotiation with somebody who's already not enforcing the laws, giving him the ability not to enforce this one.
Talk about another huge issue that's been in the campaign, but also just around the country, and that is abortion. You are pro-life. You know that. We know that. You've said that you support some federal limit on access to abortion. And I believe in the debate recently, you said you would put that access at 15 weeks. Can you explain your stance on abortion?
Yeah, I think we should have, obviously, predominantly the states make this decision. But as much as there can be a federal role, I think we look at even the most left-wing European countries. They have a standard that says after 15 weeks, there's some common sense restrictions so that we don't have elective late-term abortions in this country. Now, we have to do other things at the federal level. We have to make certain that women have access to good health care. Women have access to contraception in the same way that men do. Right now, it's very different for a woman to get contraception than a man. We should make that more equal. And then we also have to make sure adoption services are more available, that we make it less expensive to have a child and raise a child, and make certain that we're funding pregnancy centers that help women not only while they're having a baby, but afterwards as well.
Do you support any exceptions in the abortion?
Yeah, of course. What I'm saying is after 15 weeks, there's common sense restrictions. So,
but I mean, I'm talking about, you know, life of the mother,
of course, rape and incest. Of course, because the reality is, again, I'm saying that abortion is after 15 weeks, we're trying to restrict late-term abortions with common sense restrictions. So we're not making abortion illegal. We're not banning it. Those are the talking points of Sherrod Brown and the left. Here's what's interesting. Sherrod Brown, though, believes that abortion should be allowed all the way to the moment of birth for any reason and voted against the Infant Born Alive Protection Act, which says in a botched abortion, the baby's not allowed to be given life-saving care. I don't think most Ohioans think that's reasonable. I think he's the extremist on this issue, and we're certainly going to highlight that in this election.
I'll be certain to ask him about that when I have the opportunity coming up. So also, you know, the Ohio voters spoke pretty loudly in November, 57% to 43%, making the Constitution enshrining the right to reproductive health care and abortion access. Do you keep that in mind as you look at this overarching issue?
Yeah, of course. And like I said, that's why I focus on having kids less expensive, raising kids less expensive, access to health care, access to contraception. At the end of the day, the goal is to prevent unwanted pregnancies. But we also have to make certain that we are not a country that allows elective late-term abortions. I think that's where most people are. I think most Ohioans would agree with my position and disagree with Sherrod Brown's. Because, again, he's an extremist on this issue. I think most people don't think that for no reason you should be able to have an abortion at week 38, 39, 40. I think that's cruel. That's infanticide. I don't think most people think that's reasonable.
We've heard a lot about IVF since the Alabama Supreme Court ruling basically said that frozen embryos are human beings. First of all, do you believe frozen embryos are human beings, and then where do you stand on IVF?
Yeah, I definitely support IVF. I've had lots of family members and friends that personally are touched by being able to have kids as a result of IVF. I support any policies that encourage people to have more kids. We're not even hitting birth replacement rates in this country, which is a problem. So anything that gives families in America an incentive to have more children, I'm all in favor of that. Like I said, I've been touched by that personally. I've seen how these babies change these people's lives who've been able to have access to IVF.
And just back to the quick question, do you believe that a frozen embryo should have the rights of a human being?
Well, again, the reality is, as I said, clearly I'm in favor of IVF. I think that we want to have a birth rate in this country that keeps with replacement rates, and we got to do things that encourage people to have more babies.
Let's talk about the economy. What do you think is the biggest threat to the U.S. economy right now?
The United States government. The government spending is completely out of control. That's what's driving this debt. We have $34.2 trillion in debt. We have career politicians in D.C. that spend money, don't respect our taxpayer dollars. Right now, for every dollar we send the federal government, 44 cents is interest. Think about that for a second. That is insane. It's eventually going to break the economy. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. We have to massively shrink the size of the federal government. We're going to do that, get rid of departments like the Department of Education. But we also have to grow the economy and the private sector side. And that means American energy dominance, which only happens with coal, with natural gas, with oil, and nuclear. So those are the things that we got to do as a two-prong, cut government spending and grow our economy, unleash American energy, and make certain that the regulatory environment is such that that businesses want to invest and grow here.
I'll ask you a little bit more about education in a minute that you brought up. But, you know, people are struggling with mortgages, rents, groceries, electricity, all kinds of bills right now. What can be done, I guess, in the short term, say immediately after you would take office? What would you be able to do with your colleagues there to make things more affordable for folks?
Yeah, well, do the opposite of what Joe Biden's done. So Joe Biden took office and declared war on American energy, stopped the Keystone Pipeline. He's now recently stopped LNG exports. We have to unleash American energy. We're going to make America an energy dominant country. No other nation on earth will produce energy at the level that we do. That's going to drive the cost of everything down. The reason food prices are up is because of energy inputs that go in. We're going to get rid of all these EV mandates, EV incentives, let the markets decide. Those are the things that you do. We're going to stop incentivizing people not to work. We're paying people who can work not to work. That's ridiculous. So those are the things that we do that will help drive the cost down, because you're exactly right. This economy is not working for working class Americans, and it's not working for seniors. They're getting absolutely crushed. Credit card debt, as you mentioned, is up 50%. That is a problem for working class Americans. You see the jobs report. Jobs are up because people are getting two and three jobs. That's a challenge, because once you start creating an economy where you can't survive on one job, you create all kinds of other societal issues.
Let's talk about education a little bit. Can you repeat what you said about the Department of Education?
January 2025, we're going to take office. President Trump will be in the White House. I'm absolutely convinced of that. We're going to take the Senate back. We're going to retire Sherrod Brown. We're going to keep the House of Representatives. And by the end of next year, we're going to get rid of the Department of Education. It should never have been created. It's unconstitutional. It's 4,400 bureaucrats that are basically just laundering money for the Democrat Party. We're going to put schools in the hands of local communities and parents. Parents and local communities should make their educational decisions for their kids, not some sort of bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. that thinks they can run every school in America from Washington. That's nuts.
So we all often hear about local control. The state leaders will say local control, it goes to the school boards. So you're saying just eliminate any kind of federal oversight. There shouldn't be any kind of oversight in the education system from the federal level?
No, not at all. It's not necessary. Parents know what's best for their kids. Not to be indoctrinated, they got to be being taught math and science and critical thinking, communication, real American history. The parents are the best together in that local community to decide what's good for their kids. The federal government overreaches. You have these bureaucrats that just basically create rules and regulations that aren't what parents in every community want. We have a very diverse country. Mm-hmm. We don't need our educational system run remote control out of Washington, D.C.
A little bit of time we have left on domestic policy issues. I want to ask you about gun violence and gun control. We're seeing, mass shootings all the time. Gun crime here in Ohio, in Columbus. I know that you're a Second Amendment supporter, but what can be done to to end or to at least cut back on gun violence that we're seeing?
Well, the first thing we have to do is we have to punish criminals. If you look at here in Columbus, I talk to the police officers here all the time. They arrest the same people over and over again. So these people get arrested. They commit a crime. They go in there cashless bail, and they're out the next day. They get arrested. It's a rinse and repeat. The police are massively demoralized because they feel like, what's the point of arresting these people if they're just going to have prosecutors that let them off the hook? Then you go to counties like Warren County, where Claremont County, where if you commit a crime there, you're going to get punished. There's less crime. It's not that complicated. Here in Columbus and in Cleveland, a huge problem. Can't get police officers. They're way down on the size of the police force. We need to reinstate the simple fact. The police are the good guys, and we have to punish criminals.
How do you keep guns out of the hands of the bad guys? I'm not talking about law-abiding citizens. I mean, obviously, they have the right. But how do you keep the hands out of the guns out of the hands of the bad guys?
You punish them for committing a crime. At the end of the day, if you're a criminal and you want to commit a crime, a gun law is not going to stop you because, by definition, you're a criminal. You're willing to violate a law. That's just a lazy politician way to say, hey, I'm doing something about an issue, is by attacking the gun. The gun isn't committing the crime. It's the person. Punish the person committing the crime, and you will stop crime from happening. It's that simple.
Mr. Marino, just take a quick pause right here, and when we come back, we're going to get Mr. Marino's stances on some of the big foreign policy issues of the day, including the danger Russia opposes and what America's role should be in Ukraine and Israel as conflicts continue to rage on that.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
This is Columbus Perspective on the Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
Today we're focusing on the race for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate in Ohio. We've heard Bernie Marino's positions on several of the big domestic policy issues. Now we turn to his stances on some of the key foreign policy issues. Mr. Marino, first of all, let's talk about Russia. How dangerous is Russia to the United States?
Well, Russia's certainly a bad actor. Putin's a bad guy. There's no question about that. What we have to do is have a commander-in-chief that he actually believes is a threat to him, somebody who's strong, that he knows there's repercussions. That's why, if you notice, during the 4 years of President Donald J. Trump, Russia was in the corner. It did not invade any country, behaved as they should have been, even though, ironically, the Democrats and the media said Russia, Russia, Russia. But for 4 years, we had peace and stability in Eastern Europe. And we didn't have Russia doing any kind of bad acting. They took Crimea under Obama, and they invaded Ukraine under Biden.
People did say that President Trump kind of kowtowed to Putin, though.
Well, but think about how silly that is, because during the 4 years of Trump, Russia didn't do anything. Russia invaded Crimea under Obama and invaded Ukraine under Biden. So the reality is exactly the opposite. Putin feared Trump. Understood that President Trump would stand behind his word. He looked at Biden, saw weakness, and saw what happened with the withdrawal from Afghanistan, saw what happened when Democrats like Sherrod Brown green-lighted the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, making Russia wealthier, amassed troops on the border of Ukraine. And what did Biden say? Well, if it's a minor incursion, we may, you know, turn the other way, giving him the green light to invade Ukraine. So this entire situation rests on the lap of Joe Biden.
So speaking of Ukraine, what should be done going forward with, you know, military and financial support from the U.S. to Ukraine?
We can't be funding another endless war. We're funding a bloody stalemate that's causing the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Eastern Europeans. We got to get to a peace plan that ends the conflict, resolves it. Again, should never have happened in the first place. But the idea that we're going to send hundreds of billions of dollars to fund another endless war is not something that we can afford or we should even be doing.
Is that negotiated peace, though, the key, though? Because if you pull funding away from Ukraine and they lose and Russia takes over, and you're talking about the dangers that Russia poses, we can't let that happen either.
Well, because you're going to have a strong commander-in-chief that's going to go in there. I think President Trump gets in there in January of next year. And by the end of January, beginning of February, this thing's resolved and is done. And there's a peace settlement. It's not going to be ideal because, remember, it should never have happened. It happened because of Joe Biden's weakness. But we have to get to peace. We're not going to, nor can we afford, to spend hundreds of billions of dollars to fight another endless war in Ukraine. This is the biggest difference between myself and my opponents. Matt Dolan will tell you that the most important threat to this country is funding Ukraine. He said when he got interviewed by the Cleveland Plain Dealer that we have to stop being distracted by the dysfunction at our border to complete our obligation to Ukraine. My obligation is to the people of Ohio and the people of the United States of America. We have problems here in America that we have to solve. Let's do that, get to peace. That's what the leader of the world does. You know, they try to pitch this as being isolationist. That's nonsense. What I'm saying is America does play a leadership role in the world, and it's to ensure peace and stability, not endless wars.
And then what should our role be then in Israel with the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza?
Well, that's a very different situation. You're talking about Israel's at the tip of the spear of the battle for Western civilization. You have terrorists that want to exterminate every Jew from the planet and then come after Americans. The money that we give Israel has a very, very specific role. It's to end Hamas. They know how to take our aid. They take our weaponry and improve it. So that's an investment, the money that we send Israel. And what we should be doing is letting them fight the way they think it should be done. What we have had since the beginning, since October 7th, Joe Biden has been meddling into Israel's military operations and telling them how to do it. We need to let them do and have the space they need to end Hamas.
Yeah, your opponents have said that you said Israel can handle it itself. Is that what you meant or is what you're talking about now?
Well, they're very good at twisting things because they're desperate career politicians that are term limited, so desperately are looking to keep another job. They're job hunters. At the end of the day, my position on a week after October 7th was exactly what the prime minister's position was. Let Israel fight the war the way they want to fight it. On October 7th, the Biden administration was calling for a ceasefire. Think about how insane that is. Can you imagine if Canada was telling us to worry about not fighting back after September 11th? What would we have said to Canada? Right? Let Israel do what they need to do. Understand there will be civilian casualties. And you know whose fault that is? Hamas's fault. But what is Biden doing? He's funding both sides of the war. He's giving money to Gaza, which is obviously going to go to terrorists. He wants us now to build a port in Gaza. Our money, we need things here done in America. And he wants to help the terrorists at Gaza, which is insane.
Well, what about the innocents in Gaza, though? The people who are being, you know, bombarded every day, and you see, you know, on the news, they've got no food. They're hoping to get these packets that are being dropped from the sky.
Israel has done everything possible, bent over backwards, to prevent civilians casualties. All of that lies in the hands of Hamas. Hamas is responsible for every single death that's happening as a result of this conflict. Hamas needs to be terminated. It cannot exist. It cannot coexist with Israel. Israel's tried for a long time. I've been there. I've been to Israel many, many times. They have put up with things that no other nation on earth would ever put up. If Canada was bombing Cleveland, what would we say? We have to have restraint. Let's be careful. No. They have had that restraint for 75 years. And once and for all, Hamas has got to go, and the deaths are all on them. We have to be crystal clear about that.
We just have about a minute left with Mr. Marino here to talk about his bid for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate. So if you win, you would obviously be a new U.S. senator. How would you approach entering office, first of all? Would you sit back and learn a little bit or just jump right in and start working?
Well, the first thing I do is you have to hire a team. So I've committed to have 80% of my staff in D.C. be from Ohio. I want people that understand and have roots in Ohio that come back on a regular basis like me, people that are going there to serve. Certainly learn, make certain that we have people that I can lean on around different industry verticals, whether that's agriculture or banking or manufacturing. One of the things about me is I know I'm not the smartest guy in every single thing. People who think they are usually not very bright. And so really make certain that you're there to understand how the process works and you have good people to lean on. But staff is a critical thing. You have to surround yourself by really good people.
And then what would be the one big issue, first big issue that you would tackle?
We're going to tackle the border. We're going to reform the asylum laws the way I just mentioned because it's common sense. And we have to restore sovereignty in this country. We have to make it crystal clear. We want legal immigrants that benefit America don't lower wages, that people that assimilate into this country learn English, and have a zero tolerance for illegal immigration. That's my number one issue.
Mr. Marino, thank you so much for coming in today and for your time to share your thoughts and stances on the big issues today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Well, again, you can watch my interviews with State Senator Matt Dolan and Secretary of State Frank LaRose on 10TV.com. The March primary is coming up on the 19th. Get out and vote.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV, from his Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan, heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS AM, 1460 ESPN Columbus, and Sunday morning at 7 on WBNS FM, Sports Radio 97.1, The Fan.